Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation and by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit DXEngineering.com/HamNation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 242, April 6th, 2016. Bob, batteries, and RF burns. Hey, good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. It's 8 p.m. Central, and you can do the math for whatever corner of the planet you happen to be in. But no matter where you are, it is Ham Nation time. This is a show for and about ham radio operators, and we could not do it without you and the folks in the chat room and you at home watching and listening, or wherever you happen to be. Thank you so much for being part of our little family. Speaking of our little family, we've had one that's been away on the road for a while, but the prodigal Bob is back. Bob Heil, how are you tonight? Nice to see your face.
I am here. Yes, finally. Well, it's about half here. I'm not where I'm supposed to be, but I'm where I am at this time. I have no radios. It's in a stupid dressing room. This is crazy. But anyway, I got my USB Q out, plugged it in the bottom of one of the mics I pulled out of a work box, and here we are, and we're here. And we'll be back in the Ozarks next week, but it's sure good to be back, Don. I missed everybody, so thanks for letting me squeeze in there for a little bit tonight.
Well, we missed you too. Before they threw you out of the dressing room, whose dressing room are you in? That's what I want to know. Who's that? Who are you out on tour with?
That's the problem. I can't tell you that.
Oh.
I'm going to show you in a minute.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Well, I can tell you this. It's a pretty lady.
Your wife is singing?
This isn't her dressing
Sarah's?
Room, but it's...
Sarah singing?
Well, no, Sarah's not with me here.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Well, we're glad to have you hop in here at the top, and we're looking forward to having you drive the bus next week. We'll have Dale with his Show Me Your Shack video pieces and whatnot coming up a little bit later on. We've got George a couple of hours to my north up in Jackson. How are you today, George?
Hi, Don. I'm doing pretty well here. Got a couple of things to give away tonight. It's been a really nice week or so here. We were expecting some rain today, but it didn't show up. So it's been a good time to get outdoors and do a little bit of antenna work, one thing or another. But it's good to see Bob back tonight. Looking forward to hearing where he has been.
Yeah, me too. Now, I've got a question. Do you have a smoke and solder for us tonight, or are you going to share true stories from the broadcast engineer notebook?
Well, I don't have a smoke and solder, so if we've got the time, yeah, I can share some kind of real radio engineering story.
Because I know that there's never a dull moment in broadcast engineering. I can tell you for sure. Good. Well, we're looking forward to that. And also out to our west, we have our old friend Gordon West, WB6NOA, out there holding down the left coast. Gordon, how are you tonight, and what's going on in short shots?
Everything is fine. Actually, no short shots. It'll be live tonight. But we wish Dale in 6SFU and his cat a happy birthday. Dale helps us a lot with what's news going on up in the Great Lakes. April 9th, this Saturday, the Central Pennsylvania in York, Pennsylvania, having their good ham radio get-together. And week after next, wow, Don, this is going to be a big one, the big Visalia DX convention. We'll hear more about that, I'm sure, during the show. But Visalia is big. And at the same time, in Washington, D.C., it's the VHF-UHF Super conference with all sorts of tours going on. And on a week from Sunday, attention, all Ham Nation enthusiasts, get on the air, because a week from Sunday, the 17th of April, it's called Rookie Roundup. And Rookie Roundup is for those hams who have been a ham for less than 3 years, like 2 years and 363 days, less than 3 years. And on the air, we need their name, year licensed, or your year licensed, just the last two numbers, and the state that you're in. And of course, you can exchange signal reports, but work some rookies during the roundup a week from this Sunday, because they would love the contacts. And I had to laugh. QST Magazine. Wow. Finest magazine there is for ham radio operators, because everything is 100% accurate. Other than they said, be sure and call out CW rookies. No, I think they meant CQ rookies, but nonetheless. And I look forward to seeing my friends at the Nevada State Convention, April 29, 30, and May 1st, where we're going to have an instructor academy and all sorts of fun. And then guess what? I'm going to be working with Amanda at the Rocky Mountain Ham Radio Convention, May 13, 14, and 15. And then I go direct to Dayton, Ohio, and we look forward to our Ham Nation talks that we're doing in Dayton. But let me tell you, Don, we had a flock of correspondents come in after last week's big show on batteries. And I took the most common asked questions, and I've got them right here. And the first one is, what's the big deal about lithium iron phosphate? Folks, the big deal is this is 27 amp hours, and it weighs about 3 pounds. It's nothing as composed to what I used to do for 19 amp hours that weighed about 30 pounds, or a 6 amper that weighed about, well, you get the idea. The big deal about the lithium iron phosphate is the batteries are extremely lightweight. How much will they go for recharges? 2,000 recharges, which means lithium iron phosphate should last anywhere between 3 and 5 years. How fast can you recharge them? Well, by Bioenno Power, B-I-O-E-N-N-O power.com, Bioenno Power says that you could, if you had to, recharge them at half their capacity and they won't hiccup. And what causes the Bioenno Power batteries to hiccup is on purpose. It's a built-in board that senses overcharging or too much current or short circuit, and the board will pop the battery out of circuit to protect the battery, and it's a simple reset to get it back aboard. The Bioenno Powers are guaranteed for 2 years, and the big deal between a lot of the other manufacturer batteries, such as the excellent Shoreye, this is a Shoreye battery, and next week I'll have a Bioenno. They say that they're rated differently. Shoreye is great for starting vehicles, but it won't last as long on a deep cycle, such as a ham radio pulling current. The Bioenno Power batteries are rated for deep cycle, and you're going to get 2/3 more long-lasting power than you would out of a jumpstart battery. So that's why Bioenno Power is really working for the ham radio world. Now, the question is, how much do they cost? Well, they cost about $10 for every amp. And we recommend the 20 amp, and I'll have one here next week, Bioenno Power lithium iron phosphate battery to run an HF transceiver for at least a day, a little transmitting and a lot of listening. And of course, we'll get it ready for a field day that is coming up. So these were many of the questions that you asked me, and we hope we gave you a great answer to those. And we look forward to seeing you at an upcoming Ham Radio Ham Fest. And I know Don's got one, but Belton, Texas, you've got one also on April 16th. So, folks, I'm continuing to look into the lithium iron phosphate batteries, and I'll give you a longer report next week, because this Friday I'm going up and buying a whole bunch of them and putting them to good use starting this weekend. So, Don, back to you. That's my report for this week and 73, and we'll see everybody on 40 meters after the Ham Nation Net. Don?
Awesome. I got to tell you, I was pretty impressed by the BioPower lithium iron phosphate. I had never heard of lithium iron. I'd heard of lithium ion. And I thought that for the longest time, you were mispronouncing ion when you were saying iron. But now,
No. Lithium ion goes boom. Lithium iron does not go boom.
Right. I have seen the light of the exploding lithium ion pack. And I tell you what, if you've never seen a lithium ion battery pack explode and catch on fire, you really need to go on YouTube and just search that stuff. That was the whole problem with a lot of these cheap Chinese hoverboards that came out around Christmas time. They cheap lithium ion packs, and because I don't know, they were horrible. They were overcharging and everything else, and they were burning people's houses down. So no problem with the lithium iron phosphate, and that's some impressive technology. I'm looking forward to learning more about that. Thank you, Gordon. Appreciate that. Yeah, I got a ham fest for you. I got this in the email today. Saturday, April 16th. So we're 10 days away. Not this weekend, but next. The Split Rock Amateur Radio Association will hold their annual ham fest. This is out in New Jersey. We get this from N2KOJ, Eric, the King of Jersey. He sent this to us. Roxbury Senior Center, Horseshoe Lake on Eland Avenue in Suckasunna, New Jersey. And by God, that's where I want to retire to. I just want to live somewhere named Suckasunna. It's just fun to say, isn't it? Where do you live? Yeah. I live in Suckasunna. Where do you live? Not in Suckasunna. So Suckasunna's to be you. Setup starts at 6 a.m., 8 o'clock for buyers. DXCC QSL card checking available. VE session, of course. Registration starts at 8:30. Exams at 9. Talk in 146-985, the K2GG repeater. If you have any questions, just go on QRZ, look up N2KOJ, and he'll give you everything you need to know. Or you can check it out at splitrockara.org. Split Rock, just like it sounds. You're going to hit a stone with a hammer and split it. Splitrockara.org, and that is in 10 days, April 16th. So if you're up in New Jersey, just forget about it and go on over there. All right, let's go ahead and get into the news of the week with Amateur Radio Newsline. And we have Dr. T this week, so let's roll that. Report number 2005. These are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 6th, 2016. The horrific terrorist bombings in Brussels, Belgium hit very close to home for one radio amateur.
Long-time contester in the Expeditioner, Olivier ON4EI, has faced a number of challenges during his more than 20 years on the air. But perhaps the greatest challenge in the Belgian ham's life came during his moments off the air in Ireland on Tuesday the 22nd of March. On that day, his wife phoned him in Ireland from the family's home in Brussels to say that she and the couple's 8-year-old twins had been just a short distance away from the deadly bombs detonated a short time earlier at the Brussels airport. The family ran to safety just in time as the second blast went off. Olivier's wife and daughters were not injured, but he left Ireland for Brussels the next day to bring his family back to Ireland with him on Friday the 25th for the Easter holiday. Olivier then announced on his QRZ page that he would still proceed with his plans to operate as EI1A during the WPX contest that weekend, the 26th and 27th of March, writing that his decision, quote, represents the resistance and a beacon signal of liberty in memory of Brussels bombing victims on the 22nd of March 2016, end of quote. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH in Nottingham, in the UK.
The sudden death of comedian and actor Gary Shandling was a shock to fans everywhere, but it also rocked the amateur radio world.
The news of the sudden passing of actor and comedian Gary Shandling had a special significance to one person in the ham radio community, Alan Davis, K2WS.
It started back in the fall of '65. I just bumped into him. It was just serendipity, and we got to be friends. I talked to him almost weekly.
Shandling's callback then?
WA7BKG.
That's right. Gary Shandling was a ham radio operator who had regular QSOs with Davis over 40 years ago. They developed a long-distance ham radio friendship. Davis said Shandling was a jokester right from the start.
Gary had his dad print up this award called DIPPLE, D-I-P-P-L-E, dated February 1966. For his outstanding display of ignorance beyond the capability of any other radio amateur for causing undue interference on the amateur radio spectrum. Keep up the bad work. And on the lower left, Gary Shandling, his signature, chief of DIPL registration.
4 years later, Davis again paid Shandling a visit.
And at that time, he told me, I'm doing gigs in Las Vegas as a stand-up comedian. I remember thinking, gee, I don't get it. He doesn't, you know, it didn't fit at the time. I didn't get it.
But Shandling did go on to a successful career as comedian, actor, and writer, winning 5 Emmy Awards.
He could joke around and all of that, but on the inside, he was, he's got it. I'm getting a little emotional, so I'm sorry.
That's Alan Davis, K2WS, recalling his old ham radio friend Gary Shandling, WA7BKG, and later KQ7KA, who passed away after suffering an apparent heart attack on March 24th. Shandling was 66. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
And finally, a reminder that the nominating period for the Bill Pasternak Young Ham of the Year Award is now open.
We confer this annual honor on the best of the best, a young licensed radio amateur who's used ham radio for public service, benefiting his or her community, or who has impacted technological development affecting communications in some way. For details on nomination requirements and to download an application form, visit our website, www.arnewsline.org, and click on the tab for YHOTY. Completed forms and supporting documentation should be sent to the Young Ham of the Year Award in care of Amateur Radio Newsline, Inc., Editorial Office, Post Office Box 451, Huntington Station, New York, 11746.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 37 years and counting, at www.arnewsline.org. With Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Alan Davis, K2WS, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5VW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here is the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We have two solar storms that are back-to-back that could bring us some aurora later in the week, and some new active regions are rotating into Earth view off of the East Limb, which should bring you amateur radio operators some relief. Those stories and more in the news this week. Solar activity is really picking up this week. We've had multiple solar storm launches. The first one was down here. It's kind of a stealthy solar storm. The only way we knew it actually launched is it made this coronal hole a bit bigger once it finally left the disk. So after that, this we had two eruptions that have occurred up here, the latest one today. Both of these are large enough that they might have a little bit of a tail that could dip down into the Earth strike zone and give us a grazing blow. So this week we should have something hitting us around the 7th and maybe even into the 9th. So we should have multiple chances for some aurora. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see we've been well below the seafloor for quite a few weeks. But as of about the 6th, you can see we started to rise. The flux levels are rising a little bit. We're actually even popping some C-class flares here and there. Most of this activity is due to the East Limb regions that are rotating into Earth view as we speak. And this level should continue to rise and give some relief to amateur radio operators who finally should be able to get some decent radio propagation. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, despite the fact that we have those new regions rotating into view off of the East Limb, NOAA is still keeping us down to about a 1% chance for an M-class flare. Now, they may raise that up as these new regions rotate into view, probably about 5%, maybe 10%, but they still don't look like they're M-flare players just as of yet. We are still getting C-class flares from them now, so only time will tell. But the nice thing is that at least this solar flux should be on the rise here. We should be popping in the green later this week so that you amateur radio operators should get enough propagation to be able to enjoy the band conditions. And we still have everything in the green as far as solar radiation storms, so no worries there. So things are beginning to look pretty exciting this week. We have multiple solar storms that are en route. The first one should hit us right around the 7th. It's that stealthy solar storm, so it may not cause that much of a ruckus. But then we have the other two that are on their way, and if they've dipped down into the Earth strike zone, we might get a glancing blow from them starting around the 9th or the 10th. So you aurora photographers, keep your cameras ready. And then you amateur radio operators, we have those new regions that are rotating into view off of the east limb, and if they stay as active as they've been, then we'll have about 2 weeks worth of some decent radio propagation for you guys, of course barring solar storms that takes things out. But you know, outside of that, you might actually be able to enjoy the bands for a while. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Nice to have Dr. T back with us after an extended absence. Thanks a lot, Dr. T. We do appreciate you being with us. All right, the suspense is killing me. We need to go back and see if we can figure out exactly where Bob Heil is. Bob, you must fill us in and tell us where you are. And just because the suspense is killing us all.
Yeah, but the problem is that we've been in so many places, I don't even know where I am. I got some slides to show some of. Some of it's pretty cool. Next week, I'm going to show you something amazing that we're doing on one of these tours. We started this whole thing out, 3 weeks ago. Sarah was with me there. There was Charlie. And Charlie has 32 of our microphones on stage. And then we left there, went over, and started setting up for Carrie's show. Her show's amazing. It's way over the top. Here's their new board. It's the first time it's ever been used. They've got two of them, one front of the house and one for monitor. Cam Beachley. Kind of cool is a TalkMac microphone is in one of our little Pro Micros. It's cool, and they love them for TalkBack. This is some of the speaker wiring. I just thought I'd show some of you guys and gals how intense these shows are today. 16 semis. We got some pictures of that, too, I think. But Easton was setting up, and again, all of our microphones on Easton's drums. We're so blessed that these guys figured out that the technology is there, and it's all because of ham radio. There's her stage. She's in the round. It is absolutely phenomenal what they're doing, and this was about 1 o'clock a couple of days ago in the afternoon. And there I was fixing something. an amplifier. Oh, we have to fix amplifiers once in a while on the fly. This was a setup, a stage setup. And then you can see the guy up on a high ladder adjusting a light and all of the stuff that it takes to put on a show today. Then we left there, went over to see my old buddies. It's the 50th anniversary of The Who, along with the 50th anniversary of Heil Sound. So quite a nice reunion, and the boys are well. If you get a chance, please go see The Who. It's going to really be a great show for you. They're just playing their butts off. I couldn't believe it. It was really, really good. I was happy to see them in such good spirits. Usually things don't get going that way, but it was great. But we'll have more. One thing I had to tell you about Carrie, there are no more light men now. You know, we used to have light men all up around the tops of the arena. Not for her. They sew inside her clothing. They're sewing infrared sensors, and they send these light beams down from all the spots and follows her clothing. So wherever she goes, the spots go. It's amazing. I got a little demo, but I didn't have time to download. I'll do it for next week, and it's really amazing what's going on in the technology today. As I said, there's 16 semis for her, 9 buses. That's, and most of these shows are getting very complex. And all I do out here is help the monitor guys and the FOH guys pick out their microphones. I've been carrying it. I just love it. I carry one of our USB Qs in my carry bag because you never know. And that's all I'm doing. I'm importing, putting a microphone. I pulled one out of their box out there. And I plug it in, away you go. And what's cool about that is it's got bass and treble controls. I want to do 2 other things. Something that has really been loading up my inbox this week is the ICOM 7300. This looks like it is going to be the smash radio. But huge questions about what do I do? Because it started off a couple of weeks ago with the Europeans. They got the radios. They always get the radios before America. And the dynamic microphones won't work on it. And oh my gosh, they're going, what do we do now? Well, it's real simple. The ICM is the microphone for the 7300 or any of our IC elements. And you can't just go plug your old Kenwood MC50 or your Yaesu. Won't work. Sorry. And go to our site. And we don't have it up on this yet, but I want you to go here. Make a note of this. Just put our site, heilsound.com. We have got a new interactive website that tells you. You put the brand of the radio in. Then you tell it, is it a microphone? Which one? And then it comes up and tells you, you put in the radio and all that, and then it tells you what adapter for the headset or what cable for the microphone. Stephen Warford put this together, our director of operations, and I'm telling you, this is something special. So it'll help you with any radio to figure out what you need for cables and all that. But right beside that, on our homepage is a thing about the 7300 also. We're going to have a lot more. But, boy, I'm telling you, down at the bottom is a box right there. And it'll right there. And it'll tell you a little bit about 7300. You can't use dynamics. They just – why do they do this? Such an incredible technology move. And it's okay because the ICM sound great on it, but we can't use our old microphones. So just so you know. And one last thing, I want you to write this date down, July 23rd, 2016. And the reason I do is, you know, I've talked about it for a couple of years. Well, it's going to happen again. This is the home of Wes Shum, the guy that brought single sideband to ham radio. This is his home. He passed away years ago. But if you remember, I was there at one of the field days with Wes and really enjoyed it. But they're going to have a boat anchor weekend at his farm. Please come and visit us. We're going to have some really cool things there. I know Nick Tusa will be on a couple of times to tell us more about it. But just giving you the date, July 23rd. In Jonesboro, Arkansas. Which army, Heil? I don't know where I am. That's a problem. Jonesboro, Tennessee. Way on the east end. And it's really a fun event. And we'll have they'll have all kinds of radios there and things you never heard of before. But just a big boat anchor field event. So we'll be there. Well, thanks, guys and gals. It's good to be back and try to get into swing of things. I got a few more days yet, but then we'll rip out and get back into the Ozarks, and we'll see what happens from there. So thanks for picking it all up, Don. Brian, thanks a lot. Gordo, George, Val, Dale, everybody that puts this show together. It's just, I've watched a couple of them as I sit back in the back of the bus and ride along highway, whatever. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next week, and I'll be back in my old home chair in the Ozarks. So long for now.
Hey, I got a question for you, Bob, before you skate out. Your buddy Joe Walsh is going to be playing in New Orleans here pretty soon. Are you coming down here with him, or any plans for that, or do you know?
That rehearsal starts in 2 weeks, and then we start figuring out who's going where, what, why. But, yep, he's going to be all over the country. We'll have a lot more about that when things are a little more settled. Yeah.
Good. Hope you come down here to New Orleans. It'd be nice to see you. And Nick Tusa. Nick Tusa's the man. I love running into Nick at Hamfest. Love running into Nick at Hamfest. He lives down here, so.
Yeah.
Very cool. Amazing guy. Thank you, Bob. We look forward to having you back in the driver's seat and having the warden back in charge of the asylum here. The inmates are ready for arrest. Speaking of inmates, let's go on to my other striped shirt friend, and that would be our friend George up in Mississippi, a little north of me. What's going on tonight, Chief? Now, you do have a striped shirt on. Look at you, kind of.
It's got some stripes in it. It's not as striped as the one I wore on Ham College a few weeks back. It looked like something out of the prison. But anyway, great to see you again tonight, Bob, and to hear a few tales from the road. And we're looking to learn more about that in the future here. He mentioned the IC7300 there. Well, you know, people have been asking me about the video on that. It finally got posted. We had a lot of trouble getting it posted, actually. It's on YouTube, but just go to amateurlogic.tv, and there's a little story on there that'll give you the link to where you can go watch it. It's a little better than an hour's worth of Ray Novak, Tommy Martin, and myself sitting down, going through everything on the radio, going through all the menus, looking at the icons, and then answering questions. We streamed it live, so we got questions from the viewers on that and answered a lot. So it'll give you a lot of info about that radio that everyone's wanting to know about. And I got to tell you, I think they really got a hit with this one. But you can learn more. Just go over to amateurlogic.tv and follow that link to the YouTube video of it. Well, you know, last week I asked a question, and this came from the amateur radio technician exam, as well as this week's question, Will. What would cause a broadcast AM or FM radio to receive an amateur radio transmission unintentionally? And your choices were A, the receiver is unable to reject strong signals outside the AM or FM band. B, the microphone gain of the transmitter is turned up too high. C, the audio amplifier of the transmitter is overloaded, or D, the deviation of an FM transmitter is set too low. Well, we had a winner, and that is Ron Barber, W4CHI, and Ron said it's A, the receiver is unable to reject strong signals outside the AM or FM band. Congratulations, Ron. We're going to send you, and this is the last I've got on the roll. It's the DX Engineering 400 max coax with connectors already installed. Great coax there. We appreciate them giving us all this to give away to you guys. And this is the last, so congratulations, Ron. You're going to enjoy that. You know, that question there seemed a little bit, I don't know. Yeah, that one could trip you up. What would cause a broadcast radio to receive an amateur transmission unintentionally? You would think maybe the audio amplifier of the transmitters could be overloaded, might cause it to splatter a little bit. Yeah, I mean, that sounds really feasible there, but that's not the answer to it. Also, the same thing, the audio amplifier of the transmitter is overloaded. Well, that'd be the same thing as if you turned it up too high. But definitely it's not the deviation of the FM transmitter is set too low. It's that most broadcast AM FM receivers are just not really that good a receiver, and they can pick up transmissions from other bands and interfere with it. Well, for next week, I've got another question from the tech exam here, and I kind of like this one. Which of the following actions should you take if your neighbor tells you that your station's transmissions are interfering with their radio or TV reception? Yeah.
Deny it.
I can think of a couple right off the top of my head.
Yeah, well, blame it on Don, not me. It's Don doing that.
It's my fault.
You've only got four choices, and neither one is Don or Gordo. But choice A, make sure that your station is functioning properly and that it does not cause interference to your own radio or television when it's turned on to the same channel. That's one choice. B, immediately turn off your transmitter and contact the nearest FCC office for assistance.
They're
proud to hear from you. C, tell them that your license gives you the right to transmit and nothing can be done to reduce the interference.
Yeah.
You'll make a lot of good neighbors with that. And D, install a harmonic doubler on the output of your transmitter and tune it until the interference is eliminated. Now, if you think you know the answer to that and know it's not Gordo or Don, then send me an email, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And what I've got to give away here is an MFJ 113 super bright giant LED clock. It's 12 or 24 hours. It's an alarm clock. And boy, it really would look good sitting in your shack. Oh, Gordo's got the answers there. No, Gordo's got guidelines for not burning yourself up with RF. Or is that Don?
That's me.
That is Don. Yep.
I stole that from a transmitter site.
I believe you may have. So anyway, send me your answer, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win. And I'll be back in just a moment with just a couple of little minor engineering things there to talk about. But first, let's get a message from ICOM.
Spring is here. Get out. Get mobile with ICOM's D-Star radios. Extend your coverage, display, and capabilities without sacrificing size with ICOM's ID51A Plus, now in 5 colors. The RSMS1A free download Android application allows personal device connection. You can also view the location of repeater sites, send and receive pictures and text messages, DV and FM repeater search function, D-Star DV mode capable, and a micro SD card slot. If you're new to D-Star, try ICOM's ID880H. The features include VHF-UHF dual-band functionality, one band at a time, good menu structure, and easy programming, plus fast multiple scanning for maximum reception. For the ultimate D-Star mobile experience, hit the road with ICOM's ID5100A. This radio offers hands-free operation, optional Bluetooth capability, a large backlit screen for high-contrast viewing, 50-watt output on both VHF and UHF. You need to visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's D-Star radios. You can also enter ICOM's weekly drawing for ICOM swag, such as T-shirts and hats. And don't forget to check out the details on ICOM's monthly grand prize drawing for a free ICOM radio. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation for official rules and to check out all of ICOM's previous drawing winners. Sign up, and good luck from ICOM.
Don, you asked me earlier in the show tonight, was I going to have any tales from the transmitter sites? Any real good tales, just a couple of little things. You know, lightning can be, well, a little more pronounced maybe when you're around tall towers and such. If you're at an AM tower, and it may not even be a thunderstorm yet, it may be one approaching, the wind's blowing hard, you might hear something that sounds like 22 rifle fire out there. Have you ever heard that before, Don?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And that's when the static electricity is hitting those guy wires and jumping across the insulators on its way to the ground. It's pretty pretty weird. You wouldn't maybe know what that was unless you'd been around some AM towers where they have insulators in the guy wires. Yep. And by the way, how far apart are those insulators on a guy wire? Any idea, Don?
It's a multiple of the frequency, so that they're no harmonics. I do know that.
Yeah, it's about a tenth of a wavelength typically.
Yeah.
That it's not a harmonic. It's actually cut to where it's wouldn't be resonant. So
right,
that
exactly.
They look kind of invisible to the tower.
Craziest thing I ever saw on this subject, this was at the first radio station I ever worked at, an AM, KGFF in Shawnee, Oklahoma at 1450. We had had tornadic weather, you know, central Oklahoma. What are the odds of that? We had had tornadoes all afternoon, and myself, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, and Arthur Scrutchins, not a ham, and a guy who is now known by the name of Eddie Haskell, who works in the Denver area at a radio station there. We're sitting out in the parking lot drinking beer, and we could hear crackling off in the distance, and it was almost sundown, and you could see the static arcing from the guy wires to ground. It wasn't hopping the insulators. It was actually arcing down to ground. It was the freakiest thing I ever saw.
Yeah, you know, you really don't need to be hanging out immediately under those towers out in the field.
No. We were probably, I don't know, 500 feet away. Well, not like we were, no. Well, plus it's AM for crying.
Having a beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you don't want to go pee on that tower. No, not that Eddie Haskell. Totally different Eddie Haskell. But yeah, no, that's, in fact, that's what I got into. I got into an FM studio one night while I was drunk, because I actually threatened to go and pee on the AM sister station's tower if he didn't let me go in and use the bathroom. That was many years ago. So, all right, enough stories. Enough stories.
Well, one other thing I wanted to show you here, and I don't know, you probably can't see this picture on the monitor very well. This right here is an insulator. It's a fiberglass rod about that big around and probably about this long. And they use those as insulators, usually up right next to the tower, because if you look on some old installations, there's like three insulators there right beside each other in little tiny pieces of guy wire connecting them together. And now they'll use these fiberglass rods that are a little longer. This one right here came off of a top-loaded tower. You know, they'll take a tower, and most of them should be a quarter wavelength tall, but in order to use shorter towers, what they'll do is they'll top load them. So the top set of guy wires on the tower comes down a particular distance, and it's connected right to the tower, unlike, you know, normal guy wires on an AM tower where the tower itself is radiating. And it'll come down a certain distance, then it's got one of these insulators like this. Well, you can see this one right here, or maybe you can see it. It looks more like charcoal than it does nice like fiberglass. I was, we've got a 50 kilowatt, one of our AMs is, and after a recent thunderstorm, we noticed that it would chop off on modulation peaks. We'd just lose a signal in the station, we'd just die, and then it would come back. Another good peak would come and it'd die again. So we reduced the power down and it would stay on. I went out to the transmitter site, really high reflected power on the transmitter, got to looking, and one of the top guy wires was falling down, hanging beside the tower itself. I went out in the field and found the other end of that guy wire, and that's what I found right there.
Oh, wow.
What we think probably happened is it, you know, got an arc from lightning, caused a carbon track down it, and then the 50 kilowatts just had it for lunch. So, yeah, I don't know that I like fiberglass insulation when you're dealing with that kind of power. One other thing, Don, and this is a technical term, you may know it. Last night I had to work at a transmitter site. We were installing a new RF switch between a main transmitter and a backup, so you could select which one would be on the antenna. And those things are pretty heavy, you know, when it's in continuous use for broadcast and higher power and all. So I had a buddy with me, and, you know, we got it installed. But last night's adventure, I'm going to call it a two-gapper. And do you know what the term two-gapper means?
No. I know a lot of really, really strange broadcast terms, some of which probably can't be said here, but that one I don't know.
Well, this is probably one that I coined. What that meant is that we had to go through two gaps to get up to the tower, you know, out in the pasture.
Okay.
Yeah. I need my rim shot here, but
yeah,
I don't have
yeah,
it handy. Anyway, okay, enough of that. Let's go on to whatever's next, which is Dale. Dale, come bail us out of game.
That's funny.
Very muted, stories, Dale. Remember a lot of those. We're going to get things kicked off here. First, tell you about the weather, though. I saw a note from WY7KY up in Wyoming this morning on Facebook. Said, I wish this wind had stopped. Going to be over 40 miles an hour. And that's what we had yesterday. And I said, yeah, we've got the same here. And then I listened to the weather on the way home tonight. And in Wichita, the gust peaked over 60. So, boy, it's been amazing here, windy. And we've had those fires down to our southwest. And they've got them again down in northern Oklahoma and down in south central southwest Kansas. Just terrible with the wind whipping up the dead grass from the winter. So anyway, that's the weather situation here in Kansas. And tonight we'll do some nice videos for you. I hope we're going to tour the Kansas City Racy's communications trailer. And we're also going to feature a 10-year-old YL demonstrating how to use three different Morse code keys. Our first video was produced by JD. You've seen his videos before. He's a good videographer up in Kansas City. His call's in zero IRS. And the thing that's different about this video is the fact that our tour guide in the trailer is blind. And the fascinating part of the video comes toward the end. He will demonstrate how a blind person can tune the rig up and match an antenna with an antenna tuner. So really interesting. But let's watch that one first. It's Craig Martin. He's KY0 Oscar.
Here we're with Craig, KY0O. Craig, who are you with today?
I'm with the Kansas City, Missouri Racy's Group. This is our communications trailer. The equipment you see to my right is the rear operating station. We have a station just like it in the front. We are able to run voice, Morse code, and digital operation. The roar you hear in the background is an 18-kilowatt diesel generator that supplies all of our power. To my left here is our network and DC power supply. We have four batteries here that are charged with two 50-amp Astron power supplies that provide us power on the radio busts. So we have both AC and DC in the vehicle here. We've got all kinds of VHF and UHF antennas on the roof. We also have a 50-foot mast we can raise, and that's behind me. You can see the mast that goes up through the roof. It is pneumatic. That is, it's driven with compressed air, and we're able to raise that. We raise antennas on it. My antenna that I use on field day is a DXCC. So we have two complete workstations. You can see behind me to the... And right there is our desktop PC. Well, that's free. That's used for logging, and we can use it also if we need to get on the web. We can use it for that.
You want to show us something unique to most ham operators?
Okay, let me turn here. I'm going to show you how a blind person will tune an antenna. Let me turn the receiver on. We're trying to be quiet here because, well, let's see. There we are. Now, let's suppose I'm going to move this antenna a little bit. This is off-the-shelf technology, by the way. Anybody can do this. What I'm using is a noise bridge, and I'm going to tune this Tar Heel that's on the roof to a null. And here we go. That's a little loud, so we'll turn this down. Notice the pulse. I'm going to eliminate that pulse. There we go. That's how you tune. You tune for a null. Let me raise the little bit. We're not going to quite get a complete null. There we go. And that's how we, that's one way for a blind person to tune an antenna. It's perfect. You don't even have to transmit. So you can save a lot of wear and tear on radios by tuning an antenna tuner, a standard antenna tuner. I'll show you that. Just a standard little old antenna tuner in the box. This is just a little MFJ-900. You could actually put that in the line and tune this tuner with it. This is Craig Martin, KY0O, with the Kansas City, Missouri Racy's Communications Unit.
Isn't that amazing? Thanks, Craig, for shooting, for demonstrating the antenna tuning, also for the tour of the trailer there. And thanks to JD for shooting the video for Ham Nation. And we really appreciate it. Our next video was requested by email by one of our viewers. We couldn't find a lot of information about the videographer, but when I sent him a note on his YouTube page, he granted permission for us to broadcast it here on Ham Nation. The video features his 10-year-old YL Amelia demonstrating how to use three different Morse code keys. It's received more than 650 thumbs up on YouTube, and we hope you'll enjoy it here. Here's Amelia.
So today I'm going to be showing you guys about Morse code keys. I know this is a little different from what I usually do, but let's get to it. Okay, so now here we have three keys. One of them is a Stanford key made in Switzerland. We have a Bulgarian army key and a Bengali key. So the Stanford key, it's has metal at the bottom, then wood on top, and it's coated with a white or blue. This is just a prototype, so I have no logo or anything. So I'm just going to do a quick demonstration. Like always, you have to make sure that your hand is aligned with the key, and also you're holding with three fingers. So if you're left-handed like me, then you're going to put your thumb on the right side, your middle finger on the other side, and your index on top. Like that. If you're right-handed, then I'll just turn there. If you're right-handed, then you're doing the opposite. So the thumb on the left side, the middle on the other side, and the index on the top. So like that. So now I'm going to do a quick demonstration with my left hand. Like that. So that was a Stanford key. Okay, so here now we have the Bulgarian key. It's a Bulgarian army key, very light, so you have to hold it unlike the Stanford key. So you have to hold it with one of your hands. And as always, like I said, for the Stanford key, you have to keep it aligned. And same thing with your fingers. Like that. Okay, so I'm going to do another demonstration. And that was the Bulgarian key. Just to let you know, you have to hold it with your other hand, or unless it'll just flop around, and it's really hard because the top will just go like up and down and up and down. It's really annoying. So I'd recommend holding it, but for the Stanford key, you don't have to hold it because it's pretty light. Like that. So now we have the Bengali key. It's very heavy, so be sure not to drop it on your foot because it'll hit like a brick, okay? So here, it's a side swiper. And it's like a cylinder shape, and we have it's gold plated, and then it's a very beautiful key. But like I said, it's very heavy. So I'm gonna show a quick demonstration. So. Okay, not very good at side swiping, but you have a, yeah. So it's a Bengali key. You could just like look at the logo. And yeah, if you have to do modifications, this one you can modify it by opening the top. This one you can modify it. I think it's from these sides, right? Over here. And you can modify this one with this tiny screw. So,
okay. Is that amazing or what? I'll tell you what, I can't even imagine giving a presentation for 3.5 minutes live with all that energy when I was 10. I just just I couldn't remember all that stuff then, but probably can't remember it now. But anyway, thank you to YouTube user Guitar Tone for giving us permission to broadcast the video here on Ham Nation. And if I had Amelia's call sign, I would have passed it along. Wish he would have put a tone oscillator on the keys. That would have been better than we could have read her call sign. I think you could probably, if you look at it close, almost read it from the clicks when she was sending on the middle Bulgarian key there. But anyway, we thought you'd like that. It's very enjoyable to see young people so energetic and so knowledgeable and not afraid to let everybody know it. So that's it for tonight on the video segment. A couple of reminders. If you'd like to man the Ham Nation booth for an hour or two at the Dayton Hamvention, drop me a line. We'll get you on the list. Have about 7 or 8 volunteers so far, and we'll put out a tentative schedule right after May 1st and let everybody adjust their schedule, and then we'll publish a final one the week before Dayton. So we could use some more volunteers there. If you'd like to do that, just let us know at hamnationvideos.at TWIT.TV. Also, if your club would like a Skype presentation demonstrating how to better tell the club story using photography, I do have a keynote presentation filled with a lot of photographic eye candy, and we'd be happy to present it to your club via Skype. In the meantime, send your Shaq photos and your videos, please, too, to Ham Nation Videos at TWIT.TV. And if you get your Shaq photos in within the next 10 days, we'll get them into a Show Me Your Shaq segment or episode planned for April 20th. Well, Amanda's standing by with news from the chat room, but first, we're going to check in with Don and find out what's new at DX Engineering. Don, what's the 1610 all about? Take it away, guys.
They got some good stuff. We're going to talk about antennas. And, you know, Bob Heil's a big fan of the resonant dipoles. And, you know, if you've got the space and the time and the inclination to put up a bunch of resonant dipoles, then, yeah, that's the way to go. But if you only have room for one, an efficient multiband operation, that's pretty much the holy grail if you don't have room for a bunch of antennas. And DX Engineering has you covered. In fact, they have several solutions that will help you work multiple bands using a single vertical. But before we even talk about the antenna, you got to have a base, and you want a quality base to mount it on. And for that, there is the DX Engineering Omni Tilt. It's a safe, secure way to mount your vertical so it can be lowered for service. The DX Engineering Omni Tilt bases, they include those with many of their vertical antennas already ready, included in the antenna kits. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Yeah, but of course, you can buy the bases separately as well. There's an option for trap and mast-mounted vertical antennas. Just think about this. Being able to lower your antenna for service to protect it against high winds, to keep the HOA officials from sending you nasty grams. Yeah, the Omni Tilt, it's made to last. It's thick stainless steel, industrial grade stainless steel hardware. I saw those things when I was up there, and it's a great bit of kit. Now, if you're struggling to decide on a good multiband vertical to put on that Omni Tilt, DX Engineering has kits based around the Hustler, the popular multiband verticals that you work HF with performance and flexibility. They're perfect for anyone who wants a lot of coverage, but or even for the newly licensed ham. Maybe just wants a vertical HF setup that they're not going to outgrow. There are 3 kits available based around the 4-band, 5-band, and 6-band Hustler verticals. That's up to 80 to 10 meter operating with a single vertical antenna. And each one uses an efficient design with individual tunable traps. Broadband performance gives you phone, CW, and digital on most bands. And the Hustler multiband verticals handle full legal limit. And they will withstand winds up to 55 miles an hour. The kits include the antenna, the DX Engineering high-quality patented radio plate with exclusive patented tilt base, set of radial staples, radial wire, several key brackets, connectors, and hardware to make installation a straightforward and easy affair. DX Engineering also has a ton of components to add versatility to your Hustler BTV, 12, 17, 60-meter add-on kits, and a kit that lets you connect a direct line of coax right to the base of the antenna to mitigate feed line loss and improve connection reliability. They also carry all the repair and service parts you ever need to keep you on the air for years. I want you to go check out DX Engineering because they ship faster than anybody else in the industry. Get your ground shipping order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. And if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way that day. In some cases, within minutes, 5-6 minutes, it's on the truck. Proven products, expert advice, great people. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7. The web address is dxengineering.com, dxengineering.com. Thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. DX Engineering, great folks. You're going to love them. And someone else we love around here is Amanda. She handles the chat room, and there's nobody better. Amanda, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Loved you guys' stories earlier, and nice to see Bob back on. let's see. First, I have some an upgrade to announce. K4, boy. You know, I put glasses on so I could read better, and it's not helping. KF4, Elias David, says, please celebrate with me. I just upgraded to Extra. So we will indeed celebrate with you. Congratulations, David.
Yeah.
Can't wait to hear ya. And another announcement into FYE. Andy wants to know that there's a vintage computer festival in Walt, New Jersey, April 15th through the 17th. I've never even heard of such a thing, a vintage computer festival. Is this where they keep all the Commodore 64s? I don't know, but I would be interested in going just to find out what they have there. And the New Mexico CUSO party is happening on this weekend, Saturday, 8 to 8. So please join in and help those guys out, get some contacts. And also the Michigan CUSO party is April 16th through the 17th. So you guys listen out for those Michigan states as well. First, let's go to George. George, we have a coax question for you. Why run low-loss coax from base to water tower to antennas at 160 feet and from ground block run mini 8 to repeaters? Does that make sense to you?
I would, you know, typically run the same thing, but I guess when it all comes down to it, you want the lowest loss that you can get for a repeater. And I wouldn't really use Mini 8 for a repeater. But I guess if part of that run is a lower loss coax, you're better than if the whole thing was Mini 8. But, I wouldn't use Mini 8 for a repeater, I don't think.
Okay, so just not recommended. Appreciate it, George. And, Gordo, this question is for you. NY2 MC Mickey, he is going to have a rookie guest at his house, and He for the rookie roundup, I can get that out. And he wants to know, can that rookie go into the extra portion of the band if Mickey is an extra? Is there anything extra you have to do? Does he have to use his call sign, anything like that?
Well, if the rookie was an extra, sure, he could operate in the extra class portion of the band. But if he operated as a third party to the extra's equipment, then I don't know if he would really qualify for being able to get points for the rookie roundup. But he could certainly go on the air and have fun. So that's a tough one. It all depends as to how the control operator wants to have that rookie identify with the rookie's call sign and his call sign, as long as he's right there to be the control operator for the undergraded operator on the extra portion of the band. Confusing, yeah.
I'm confused. In fact, I think I'm so confused, I would just stay in the whatever licensed part of the band that I'm good in, just to make sure you're doing it right.
Precisely. That's what I would recommend as well. As a technician, let me tell you, the 10-meter band is going to be hopping with activity, 28.3 to 28.5 for the rookie that's only a tech, 10 meters, yahoo.
And I did it my first year, and I had a blast. That was back in 2009, and I learned a lot of the HF etiquette and how things worked. So I really hope to hear a bunch of the rookies on there and look forward to meeting them. I'm going to try to be on the air to at least meet and greet for sure. This is kind of a general question since you guys started talking about the RF burns. Maybe I don't want to see your scars, but let's do a round table. Who's got some RF burns that they didn't mean to have? Gordo, you start.
I've been pretty careful. One time aboard a ship station, I was holding on to the backstay antenna, and I didn't realize they were transmitting. I was also in contact with the seawater. I won't go into the exact details. There is no, thank you very much. We will not show you the RF porn. It hurt.
Oh, okay. Don, how about you?
I got burned on my finger once, and this was actually on a CB antenna. It wasn't mine; it was somebody else's. He was running power, and yeah, I got burned on the finger. And let me tell you something: that an RF burn feels like no other kind of burn, and it takes forever to heal. So yeah, I've had one on my finger before. It's not fun.
George, how about you?
Well, I don't have any battle scars showing. So, I've had a few over the years. Probably the first one I got, like Don, was from a CB antenna. You know, 5 watts will give you a nasty little sting. I don't remember, though, having any long-term effects from it. But I do remember the most recent one I got. And remember we were talking about the 50 kW transmitter a little earlier. Well, all of these AM stations have a little box at the base of the tower we call a doghouse, and that's where the tuner goes, is right at the base of the tower there. And for 50 kW, you know, the tuner is about the size of, a refrigerator maybe, you know. There's some mighty big coils up inside of there, and there's a base current meter located inside there that you can see the RF current going into the tower, and they usually have a switch on it so that you can short across or take out of circuit that meter so that the lightning doesn't treat it like it did that insulator behind me. Well, there's a little cover that goes over to cover up the hole where you reach in for the switch, and there's a little neural net right there that held that cover in place. Well, I reached up there to loosen that neural nut where I could get to the switch. And just touching that, I let go real quick. And it hurt for 2-3 weeks.
Wow. I've been in one of those dog houses at a 50,000-watt station a few times. And I tell you, the RF made the hair on my arm vibrate. I mean, it's freaky being in those things at 50 kW. It's freaky.
Oh, you hear them singing, you know, it's,
yeah.
You hear the modulation, you know, coming off those coils and all.
We would walk out to the towers at night at KOMA in Oklahoma City, 50,000 watt, had a 3-stick array out in the backyard, and we would carry fluorescent tubes, and we'd get about halfway out between the building and the tower, and the tubes would blink on. We'd hang them in the fence, in the chain link fence, to illuminate what we were working on out there. Just weird.
That's pretty interesting,
today,
guys.
Yeah, today, I mean, legally, you couldn't do that. I mean, you couldn't really work that close to that high RF.
Nope. Which could explain a lot about people who have been around high RF environments, like you and me. Mainly me. Yeah, see?
Yeah,
exactly. Thanks, yeah. That's right. Oh, still store is a fun thing, isn't it?
Oh, that's funny. And now, you guys, I got my own RF burn. It was last September, and I'll never forget it. We were getting ready to do an Aries event. We're covering this 100-mile bike ride and getting the APRS kits ready to go out to all the SAGs. And they're all in these camo boxes, and we're testing them all out. And there's just this itty-bitty little antenna that goes with each of them. And this one of the guys that was testing one, he said, "Here, just hold this part." And I was holding the little antenna, and it beacons. You know, they beacon every 5 to 10 minutes. And I'm
like, Yahoo!
I'm feeling, and then what am I feeling? Like, oh, you got your first RF burn. That is so cute. And then everybody stopped and had to like break out their hands and their arms, showing all of their RF burns. So it was actually pretty funny, but.
My dad had a phrase for when things like that would happen to me. He would look at me and go, "That'll learn you, won't it, boy?"
That's hilarious. Hey, you guys, that's all the questions I have in the chat room. So, Don, I will send it back to you to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody.
Oh, man, I can't imagine why. All right, let's thanks, everyone. Let's go over where the nets are. I haven't seen a 40-meter frequency in the chat room yet. Has anyone seen that?
I have. It's 7185 and 14268 on 20 meters.
Okay, good deal. Of course, the digital nets on Echolink, that is 30 Charlie. And on, did I say Echo? No. I'm getting back. Echolink is 355-800. That's the Dewdrop In conference server. And D-Star is 30 Charlie. There you go. So there. I think that's got.
No. It's Reflector 14 Module C.
Why am I saying 30? What's wrong with me?
I don't know.
What's wrong with you?
It's probably the RF.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's it. I don't know. I'm still euphoric because I drove the Trans Am to work today. And I drove home with the T-tops off and the wind and sun in my face and fog hat on the radio. So I'm in a great mood today. So, all right, 14 Charlie. 14 Charlie for D-Star. Why am I saying 30? That makes no sense. All right. And this is iced tea, by the way, tonight. I just want you to know there's nothing alcoholic in there. So I'm naturally this way. That's scary. All right. So thanks to everybody for being here. And Bob will be back in charge next week and not a moment too soon. So for the assembled throng, I will speak for the room and say good night, everybody. And thanks for watching Ham Nation. We appreciate you. 7-3 and good night.
And that will learn you, boy.
That'll learn you, won't it, boy?